Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos. Hey, my name is Jed Lee, and welcome to Reading with Your Kids, coming to you from the legendary neighborhood of Reedville, Boston, Massachusetts. On Reading with Your Kids, we celebrate the magic of books, the joy of family reading, and the authors who inspire us all. Our mission is to help all families grow closer through reading. To help us in our mission, please be sure to tell all of your family and friends about the show. Tell your kids' teachers, librarians, principals, the lunch ladies, and let them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Amazon Music, CastBox, Player FM, Audible. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. Today we have a real page-turner of an episode for you. First up, Abigail King Nguyen is here to celebrate her new middle grade novel. It's called The Veil. And later in the show, our dean of all things STEM and STEAM, the admiral of adventure, Jennifer Swanson, is here to celebrate Atlas Obscura Explorer's Guide to Inventing the World. Before we invite our guests into the studio, we want to let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Zevo Life. Are you looking for a clean, sustainable boost to your day, something that'll keep you going from breakfast till story times? Check out Zevo Life, a nutrient-packed microalgae that's taking the health world by storm. We're talking about over 50% plant protein, essential nutrients, antioxidants, fiber, the whole superhero cape of daily wellness. And the best part, it takes only one teaspoon a day. Whether you're performing your best Gruffalo voice or hosting a family read-aloud marathon, Zevo Life gives you that extra energy to bring your characters to life. Head on over to Zevo.life and use the promo code READ for 30% off. It's plant-based, eco-conscious, and backed by a 30-day risk-free guarantee. So check it out. Go to Zevo.life, Zivo.life, and use the promo code READ for 30% off. Zevo Life, eat clean, read big, and shine bright. Before we invite our guests into the studio, I would love to invite you to visit a very special website. It's clownswithoutborders.org, clownswithoutborders.org. This is a group that I absolutely adore. I am part of Clowns Without Borders, and I had the honor of being part of the 2023 tour of El Salvador. I had so much fun joining with artists from all over the world to bring a smile to people who really needed it and really appreciated it too. And we would love for you to join us as a monthly joy maker. The joy makers, they're a family of people just like you who love to laugh and make other people feel good. So please take a moment and visit clownswithoutborders.org and consider joining me as a joy maker. My friends, we are in for a treat. Tonight, we're talking about a brand new middle grade novel. It's called The Veil, and our guest is coming to us from San Francisco. Please welcome to the show, Abigail King Nguyen. Abigail, how are you?
I'm great, Jed. Thank you so much for having me.
Delighted to have you on. This is The Veil talks about technology and artificial intelligence. This is something that we should have been talking about years ago.
Yep. The train has left the station.
it really has. You and I were both talking about how Zoom kind of frustrated us a bit tonight. But I'm amazed at what AI can do, and I use it as a tool. But then I also look at it and think, man, I am glad I'm not 30 years old and looking to start a career, because just about everything can be done by AI.
It's pretty incredible. You can even make a whole app in just a few sentences. It's fascinating.
Yeah. In fact, just yesterday, I was talking to my chiropractor, and she was asking me about books and podcasts and whatnot. And she's like, I'd like to write a book about about acupuncture, introduce it to kids. And but boy, I'd have to find an illustrator, and that's so hard and it can be so expensive. And I went home and I opened up ChatGPT and gave it probably a 5-sentence prompt, and it created a beautiful image of a chiropractor talking to a kid.
And there you go.
And it's again both terrifying and amazing.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. So tell us about The Veil. Who are we going to meet in this book?
Yeah, so The Veil, it's about an inventor family called the Lees. They create an AI-generated virtual fantasy world that their son, 13-year-old Bran, has been training for the past 7 years. So it's actually created by Clean AI. It's originally based on Bran's drawings, then the father's animation in this world, and then they use AI generation to multiply their work. And the way Bran describes it to his friend Piper is it's like in Narnia where you plant leftover toffee plants and or treats, and it grows into a toffee tree, or gold coins turned into a gold tree, like things that he plants in the Veil, they grow by the power of his own imagination. So it's this really incredible technology system that they've built, and they're brilliant. But as a family, they've actually fallen on hard times at the time the story starts. And Bran, as a last-ditch effort, decides to submit the Veil into this high-stakes competition to win $10 million in financing to help pull his parents out of their financial situation, but also invest in the Veil and hopefully bring it into the real world that he's hoping it to bring. I hope it will become.
Wow. Wow, that is incredible. Now, I understand from notes that he kind of escapes reality in this fantasy land.
That's right. So he has been living, for better or worse, in this world for about 7 years at the time the story starts. And part of his journey is needing to learn in the real world. And that's kind of like a theme of the story. You know, human relationships, they're hard and they can disappoint us. And for Bran, it's easier just to retreat into the Veil and live with his adorable elves, who are fabulous. You're going to enjoy meeting them as well. But he needs people like himself, right? And so that's actually part of his arc, is learning to overcome those challenges, learning to like recognize the people around him are flawed, but being in a relationship with them is vital to his life and to their lives.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of people living this life right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things that absolutely terrifies me about AI is something I heard Mark Zuckerberg talk about. You know, he's talking about, you know, there are so many kids that are lonely these days. And so his solution is to create an AI friend that these 13 to 14-year-olds can have so that they're not lonely. And I think that's the most terrifying idea that I've ever heard.
And that's very much how this world began. Like, Gnomely, his name actually comes from the word lonely. Mm. And as you know, like, Bran falls in love with this world. He falls in love with a girl in this world too. And that is very much the danger, I think, of these tools and technologies. Like, they are seductive and they are wonderful and they can get you through hard times. So they can be there as a crutch, but only as part of a greater system where you're ensconced in a community. And so, yes, there is definitely a risk that people go too far and they just take the easy way out by living in these virtual worlds.
Yeah, yeah. Where did the inspiration for this story come from?
So I draw my inspiration from everywhere, but I worked in artificial intelligence for a number of years in Silicon Valley. And so I saw this really powerful technology that was already seeping into everyone's lives. I actually wrote this book 10 years ago, but it was too early to publish a novel about AI generation. And so my agent at the time just buried it. It never saw the light of day, never went to any publishers. But I wanted to democratize access to this technology. Like, this is really interesting, really cool. I wanted to equip my young readers and the young at heart on, like, what does this mean? Like, you read this book and you will intuitively understand, like, what is AI generation? How does it work? What are the potentials? But also, what are the pitfalls so that we can avoid them and protect ourselves?
You mentioned that reading this book can help you understand how AI works. Mm-hmm. Can this old guy understand how AI works? Because I know every once in a while I'll look at my statistics and I'll see, oh, I think somebody somewhere in the world has just vacuumed up all 2,200 episodes of Reading With Your Kids today to train in AI.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there are samples in the story where he drops. So the story is actually about clean AI, but obviously these technologies can be used to take your AI or your intellectual property. So they have a scanner in which he drops books, folklore, fantasies, fairy tales, all out of the copyright. So from ancient times, there's like the Brothers Grimm, there's 1001 Arabian Nights and the Magic Paintbrush. So these are all ancient texts. Drops them in the scanner basket, which then uploads them, scans them, understands them, and pours them into the world of the Veil. And so you will see these little stories popping out here and there. You can trace the story of Hansel and Gretel from the appearance of a candy hut to Gnomely actually creating a trail of mushrooms where he thinks about how the birds are going to come eat the mushrooms and take them away, just like in that story of the elves who got lost. And you can see how it takes the story of Hansel and Gretel, this familiar story about a brother and sister lost in the woods, that they create a trail of breadcrumbs, and it transforms it to fit the story of the Veil. And that's the way AI generation tools work. So yes, you can read this and you will see like, okay, this is how it happens.
Wow, that's fascinating. And it's interesting that they use the original fairy tales to train this, because those original fairy tales are terrifying.
Some of them are pretty terrifying. So there is a wizard that appears out of nowhere and other things like that.
Wow. Wow. Now I was reading on your website, you tell stories in all sorts of genres, movies, TV, novels. You're a New York Times bestselling author. Do you have a favorite medium to work in?
Oh, I love them all. I love what each of them brings to the story and the process. So with a book, you can go deep into the interiority of a character. In this one, I can geek out over the technology and talk about like the frontiers of artificial intelligence and what does it mean if an AI starts to create. And those are things that you can put them in a film somewhat, but there's not really enough room. There's not enough airtime. It's only a 90-minute thing. But in a movie, you can showcase the beauty of the Veil in a way that you can't capture in a novel. Like, you can really see the expansiveness of this world and like soar out over the clover fields and the blue forest and see the storm cliffs for yourself. So I love what each medium brings to a story. And so that's also partly why I love the process of adapting a work into multiple mediums. So we have the book, we have a short film prequel that takes place 6 years prior to the book, and we have a Roblox game in the works that's going to be coming out in a month or so.
Oh, neat. Yeah, we've had some guests come on and talk about Roblox, and my kids are adults now, so they kind of missed that, so I was never familiar with it. But it's all the rage, and it's kids are really loving it, and they're able to create in that world. Am I right about that?
Yeah. So our game, this one isn't one that you can create in. It's a like a 8-level game that you go through and you experience and get to explore the world of the Veil and go through a bunch of hurdles, rescuing dragonflies on your way to confront the wizard. But there is another version in the works that we're thinking about that would allow them to create the way Bran creates in the Veil.
Wow. Now, when you're writing a book like this, are all these ideas flying around in your mind? It's like you write, oh, the dragonfly. Oh, we can do a Roblox thing with dragonflies and have to write that note down so I don't forget it. And
very much so. So I actually, I run around all day with a million ideas popping into my head. So I will show you my notes. Right now, here's the latest. It's like all my notes here, I just, as an ID comes in, I stick it into whatever bucket it belongs to, because I have a million buckets. It's funny, when I first started writing novels, all my ideas went into the one novel, the one bucket, until I started writing more. Then I realized, oh, actually, this particular idea doesn't fit into this world at all, and it needs to go over here. So I have buckets related to things like the Roblox game. I was just speaking at San Diego Comic-Con, so I had a bunch of ideas for things to talk about there. I'm a part of the Ride Back Rise circle, so I have ideas that come out for that one, and then I have a couple other novels in the works, so my ideas go into those buckets too. Oh, and there's Roblox, the Veil Roblox game.
There you go. Yeah. So how many plates are you spinning at the same time?
I am still exploring the boundaries of how much I can do, but I think I can usually work on one novel at a time, and then I'm doing the adaptation for the Veil, and I have a team around me, so like commenting on the animation, commenting on the Roblox game, like that's easy for me to do as kind of like the keeper of the story world. But generating a new novel, it's an all-consuming experience. So I usually can just do one at a time.
Okay. All right. I'm curious, what were you like as a little girl, as somebody in middle school?
Well, I think who you saw me on the outside was very different than who I was on the inside. I did tell my brother and sister stories my whole life, so they saw that side of me. But I was full of a lot of dreams and stories. I loved to read. I read myself to sleep every night. Outside, you probably would have seen like more of like a quiet girl. Like I did read. I was like reading in the hallways as I walked along, but you didn't know what was going on in my mind. And I had this imagination. I didn't know I had this imagination either. But yeah, books I think were where I found my friends initially and connected, and I got to explore worlds that I couldn't go to in Ohio. But over time, books have become a medium for me to connect with people too.
Yeah.
Maybe that's similar to what's going on in the Vale, and I didn't realize it till now.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I can think of there were a lot of kids I grew up with that were just immersed into books, and it was really hard to get them out and mm-hmm. around and get dirty and play baseball or football with us. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I did play baseball with the neighborhood kids.
All right. That's good. Oh, boy. When did you know that you were going to make storytelling your profession, your career?
It was a very, very long journey. So I actually started writing my first novel, a middle grade fantasy, 18 years ago. I was thinking about being a law professor, and I just couldn't bring myself to take the final steps. I did everything to do that. I'd gone to law school. I clerked on the D.C. circuit. I practiced law at a big shoe, one of the big law firms in New York City. And the next step would have been to write an article to go on the market. And I just couldn't bring myself to do it. But I had the fantasy novel swimming around my head. And my husband encouraged me, like, you're so excited, just try it. So I did try it, and it came pouring out of me. But it would take me 10 more years after that to publish. And I wrote 5 novels on the way to my first novel, which is Love Boat Taipei. And this book was actually the last book that I buried before Love Boat Taipei. I had it again, because like I said, it was AI generation. It was about AI generation, and my agent just didn't know what it was. So even after I published Love Boat Taipei, I was still, you know, there was a tipping point when I actually started to call myself a writer. And that was when I was in my MFA program, probably like 6 years into my journey. But even after I published the novel and it hit the New York Times list and it was being made into a movie, I was still hanging on to my corporate job. And it wasn't until we greenlit the film and my husband said to me, he's like, everybody wants to make a movie. You're actually making a movie. Why are you like stressed out about all these little things at work? And so I left my corporate job and I haven't looked back since.
Good for you. That's great. So Love Boat Taipei became a movie. You were a producer on it, mm-hmm. or executive producer.
Executive producer.
So talk, we have lots of authors and aspiring authors on who are hoping that their book gets turned into a series or an animation. And so talk a little bit about that dream, what it was like for it to come true. And then how much different was it creating a film as opposed to creating the novel?
Yeah, so it was really like a miracle. And I didn't know until it became a movie how much of a miracle it was. But I think, you know, the most rewarding part for sure is like getting to meet the cast who embody your characters and know your characters as well as you do. We filmed in Taipei at the height of COVID. And so we joked that we had the most safe set on the planet because we had to go through 2 weeks of quarantine, Taiwanese protocols and U.S. protocols because it was a U.S. production. So we had 20 extra staff on set, like changing our masks out every couple hours. And we had to swab COVID test every few days. So that was insane, but it was a very bonding experience. And yeah, just seeing the story come to life through their eyes, like all these other incredibly talented creatives, like who are working on your work is such a privilege. Mm-hmm. The process itself was, you know, we actually began with a book, and I had a lot of agents who were interested in the property, and right away they were talking about movie deals. And my agent that we went with, like we made an announcement carefully, like to let the publishers know that she had the book, and she started getting inquiries right away. So then she ended up holding an auction for the novel, and that created buzz. And pretty much when we announced the book deal with HarperCollins, the scouts and the producers in Hollywood started calling. And so that at that point, I had to decide, like, is it a TV series or is it a feature film? Do we want to make it a full-blown musical since it's about dance, or do we want to just lean into the dance elements? So we went with leaning into the dance elements for a feature film. And then after that, you find a screenwriter, you work on that script back and forth to try to get that into shape. And then once that's done, then you can greenlight the project and bring on the rest of the talent, the director, the heads of department, and the cast, of course.
Yeah. So you must have had a very good agent to have gotten you all that control and, you know, creative control. I remember reading the first couple of movies that were based on Stephen King novels that he wasn't happy at all with the way they turned out. And he had
it always happens that way. Yes. So and even for myself, like I had to pick my battles very carefully. And for me, the most important thing was the soul of the story and that the characters were true to themselves. So, but having gone through the experience, I really do believe that authors should always be involved in their films, especially, you know, all the authors on your podcast, anyone who's looking to make their book into a film. I think I saved so much money for the studio because on set, I know the world. I intuitively understand, oh, there's a hallway missing there and you're going to need it like five scenes from now. Right. And so things like that, if you don't catch them at the front of things, you have to reshoot the entire thing later because it doesn't work. So things like that is just so easy for me as like the holder of the story. And just even little beats here and there, you know, this, like there's a beat here missing. There is no one's moving in this room. Like they should be moving, like things like that are all ways that I was able to add value to the project as an author. And I'm so proud of, Philip Pullman, who has been working on his, Percy Jackson series. Like he's now doing the TV series and he's one of the creators and it's so well done. It really shows that he's involved.
Yeah. Well, let's tell the audience a little bit about Love Boat Taipei, what's that story is all about so we can run out and find it.
Yeah. So that is, there's three books in the series now. It's a trilogy. And the first one is about Ever Wong. She's an 18-year-old girl who goes from Ohio to Taipei to learn language and culture. It's based on a real program that's been around since the 1960s, nicknamed Love Boat. That's where the book gets its title. It was nicknamed after the American TV series because Asian American parents, Asian Australians and Europeans, they would send their kids there to learn language and culture, but also find a spouse. And so it ended up being this big kind of meat market, hookup culture. And I went on this program myself as a teenager. I was invited by the Taiwanese government and I had no idea that it was this like big meat market. So I got there and I saw these Asian Americans, like they're really cool. They knew everything about pop music and food and culture. And they were sneaking out to go clubbing. And it was a side of Asian Americans I'd never seen before. So I wanted to capture this crazy story that we knew about in our community, but people outside the community didn't really know. So that is now Love in Taipei on Netflix worldwide. And I'm thrilled to be able to share that story with the world.
Well, it will go on my to watch list.
Yeah, thank you. And please rate afterwards. I found that our community doesn't tend to rate the film. So rating the film, rate the books, that's all very helpful in getting word out.
The Veil, are you planning on making this a series?
So the book itself, I will say that it does end with a little bit of ambiguity. So there is a possibility. Right now we're just focused on this book. It's a standalone book. And we have a short film prequel, as you know, that's starring Lea Salonga, who is my childhood hero. She's also the singing voice of Jasmine and Mulan in the Disney movies and was Miss Saigon on Broadway. She also played Eponine and Fantine in Les Miserables. So she stars as our boy's mother, who's a roboticist and a hardware engineer. And we're working now on the feature-length film. So I'm hopeful of lots of good things to come.
That's really wonderful. Where can we find the short film? Is it available anywhere?
Yeah, so we're actually finishing it. We're finishing animation. It's a hybrid live action animated film. So we filmed the live action in October of last year, and then we've been working on the animation and the post-production ever since. So we are having a couple screenings. We'll probably have one in the Boston area. So the best way for people to find out about the screenings is to follow me. My newsletter is the most accurate way of getting to me. So my website, abigailhingwen.com, you can sign up for my newsletter there and I'll let you know about the Boston screening and as well as screenings in Los Angeles, San Francisco, probably DC, New York and Chicago and Tucson right now. Those are the ones coming together.
You really should, you know, get some energy so you're not sitting around wasting time all day.
It has been insane. We're like at the time that we're talking, we're about 6 weeks from launch and it's insane with the interviews and my phone keeps just a million texts keep coming in. So I'm going to try to unplug for about a week before everything really hits.
Well, we're really grateful that you chose to spend some time with us. If folks want to know more, they can go to abigailhingwen.com.
Mm-hmm. That's right. abigailhingwen.com. All the information's there. We're actually doing a pre-order promotion for folks who grab the hardcover, You can submit your receipts on my website. There's a link there on the Vail webpage to get a free set of stickers. They're so cute.
Very cute. We've had a great time speaking to the author of The Vail. It's the new middle grade novel from our guest, Abigail Hing Nguyen. Abigail, thanks so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Chad, thank you so much for having me. Hope to meet in person soon.
Hey, my friends. You know one of my favorite parts of the day is story time. There's just something magical about snuggling up with your kids, opening a great book, and escaping into an adventure together. And let me tell you, that moment becomes even more magical when you're curled up in the softest, coziest bedding you've ever felt. That's why I'm so excited that CozyEarth.com is supporting Reading With Your Kids. Their bamboo sheets, comforters, and pajamas are unbelievably soft, naturally breathable, and temperature regulating, which means no more sweaty nights or chilly toes. Right now, Cozy Earth is offering Reading With Your Kids listeners an unbelievable and exclusive 41% off their entire site. That's right, you heard me right, 41% off. So go ahead, create your own cozy reading nook. Wrap yourself and your kids up in something comfy, grab your favorite bedtime book, and turn story time into the best part of your day. Head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code READ at checkout to save 41%. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code READ. Hey, my friends, I have a super idea you are going to love. How about this weekend, turn your backyard cookout into a storybook celebration. Fire up the grill, crack open a few of your favorite picture books, and serve up Big Fork Brand's legendary bacon sausage. Made with nitrate-free bacon and premium pork, it's juicy, smoky, and unforgettable. Top it off with Big Fork's spicy Chicago Fire sauce, and you've got a meal as bold as the characters in your favorite bedtime tale. Get 20% off your order using the promo code READ at BigForkBrands.com. That's BigForkBrands.com. Promo code READ to get 20% off, because nothing brings families together like great food, great books, and a whole lot of flavor. Big Fork Brands. Read, grill, repeat. My friends, I am so excited. Joining us once again from Jacksonville in the great state of Florida, our guest is here today to celebrate her new middle grade nonfiction book. It's called Atlas Obscura, Explorer's Guide to Inventing the World. Please welcome to the show the dean of all things STEM and STEAM, the admiral of adventure, Jennifer Swanson. Jennifer, how are you?
I am so great. It's awesome to be back on Reading With Your Kids, Jed. I have missed you, and I've missed this introduction. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'll record it for you. You can have it around with you. Anytime you go into a room, you can just play it on your phone.
That would be fantastic.
So tell us, Atlas Obscura, Explorer's Guide to Inventing the World. What a cool title.
It is. And so I am so honored to have done this book. So Atlas Obscura is a huge, big travel company for adults. So if any of you have heard about it, and they do all of these cool books about like food if you're traveling, or, you know, all of these different things. And this book is their second kids book. So, and it's all about inventions and STEM. So, I mean, this is like tailor-made for me, right? It was so much fun. And I'm the co-author. So the my co-author is Dylan Thuris, and he's one of the founders of Atlas Obscura. And they asked me to kind of be the other co-author with Dylan. And it was so much fun making this book. Let me just tell you, it's phenomenal.
That is awesome. And you showed me a little bit of the artwork and the design of the book, and it looks really cool. Something that is absolutely going to captivate kids' attention.
Yeah. Well, so the illustrator is Ruby Fresson, and she did a fabulous job. If you're familiar with the first Atlas Obscura book that they had, that one, let's see, that was the Atlas Obscura Explorer's Guide for the World's Most Adventurous Kid. And it hit the New York Times bestselling list. It sold over 200,000 copies. Wow. And so this one, they hope, we all hope, that this one does the same. But now we're focusing on inventions. So as I'll just read kind of the tagline here. It is an illustrated STEM-oriented exploration of the world's most interesting technologies, inventions, and scientific discoveries.
Wow. Very, very cool. So if your dream comes true, I'm going to have to add to that introduction. The Dean of All Times, the Admiral of Adventure, and New York Times bestselling author.
Well, let's hope so, right? I mean, we'll see. Nothing is ever guaranteed. But
you are a certified, Reading With Your Kids certified great read author.
I am.
Or astronaut, aquanaut. And so we have to add that to the introduction.
That would be fabulous. So the cool thing about this, so if each spread, each two pages has two inventions, and it's kind of, it takes you through history. Right. So it starts kind of at the beginning of when we started inventing, and then it ends at AI, which is like, you know, the ultimate invention. But it's like this. So let's say you want to invent a telescope. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is something you have to invent before you can invent the telescope?
I would have to invent a clue because I wouldn't even begin.
Okay, well, it's a lens, right? Like the lens,
The
lens, the piece of glass that you look through. But before that, you have to invent glass, right?
No, because
glass has not always been around. And before you invent glass, you have to invent fire because you have to melt something, right? So that's kind of what this book does. Dylan is the creative genius behind this book because his mind kind of took us forward, right? Like we talked about how you invent steam, then you invent the steam engine, then you invent boats and trains to use with the engines and all these different things. But then you get to the point forward where you kind of have to go back and start over and go like, how did we invent electricity and what did we do from that? So it's a lot of kind of moving forward and moving back in time, but it's curious how all of these inventions are interconnected, right? Mm. There's a lot of cool critical thinking and scientific discovery in this book.
I wonder what the very first invention a human being created was.
Well, so what was the first one? We started with fire.
Makes sense.
Right. So on one side, we have the Wonderwork Cave, where the spark of one tiny flame was like 1.8 million years ago or something like that. And on the other side, fire today, there's an image of the fire research lab where firefighters go to train and learn how to put out fires. So you see, we kind of compare and contrast, or we move forward in history mm-hmm. and all this kind of stuff. So if you are a kid who loves lots of like little fun facts and science that connects, you're going to absolutely love this book. Even if you're not a kid and you'd like all those things, you'll like the book.
You know, it reminds me, my son was one of those kids. I think his motto was, why use one word when I can use 75? and he would have loved this book because it would have just given him all that information, you know, where he's like, well, you know, the fire happened in this time and then it led to this and this and this and this. And now, you know, there are so many kids that are like that.
Yeah. Well, and the cool thing about, so Atlas Obscura, as I said, is a travel company. So there's points on a map, you know, longitude and latitude for where you can find all these. And what would be really cool is if you could use this book and like go visit these places.
Yeah.
Right. You know, cause you could see, can I visit all 50 of the places that are in here as inventions? And hopefully I would love to do that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to, cause it's all over the world. It's not just in the United States or even just in North America. It's all over the world where a lot of these inventions occurred. But it's just, I don't know. I was really, when they asked me if I wanted to do this, I was like, I couldn't say yes fast enough. This one and the Lego book, right, that I wrote, I was like, definitely yes on both of these books.
Awesome. You mentioned that the Atlas Obscura is a travel company and they're showing mm-hmm. you where these inventions happened. What's the closest to your home in Jacksonville?
Oh, Kennedy Space Center. I think we have, yeah, because we talk about one of the shuttles, uh-huh. I believe. So, yeah, that's what I'm trying to think. I think that one's in there. I mean, it's been a long time since I wrote that, but there's also, oh my gosh, there's just places all over the world where you wouldn't necessarily even think. One of the cool places is in China where they had the first fireworks factory out there. So that would be so cool to visit. I don't know. It's just, I love to travel too. So for me, this is like, oh, look, honey, this is where we're going. We're going to follow all these, all these different inventions.
Yeah. You know, Jennifer, I don't know if I ever told you, we hosted, international kids in our home and a number of them from China. And I remember taking one when she first arrived. I took her into the school and showed her how to get back and forth on the public transportation. And we're walking through downtown Boston, and I think we're going by Paul Revere's home. And I said, I said to her, this house is almost 400 years old. And she not at all impressed. And then we got home, and I went on Google, and when we Googled her city, Zhijiazhuang in China, and discovered that there is a bridge in Zhijiazhuang that's 1,200 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't really have that in the U.S.
Hey, what was the invention that was most surprising to you?
Okay. I don't know about that one. I'll have to think. Well, this one was really cool. See, this is where, again, Dylan was so brilliant about finding all of the different ones that you could kind of go back and forth with. This one I love this one, the Bagger Z88 excavator. It is the biggest, baddest rock mover of them all. So this is a huge kind of digger that it's enormous, and it can dig out, let's see, it's heavier than the Eiffel Tower, it's 72 stories tall, and nearly 30-pound machine can remove 8.5 million cubic feet of earth per day. Just think about that. I mean, you're just like, now, it does it very slowly, right, for the most part. But some of these things I had never even heard of. And I was like, wow, these inventions are so amazing. And, you know, I've talked about this before in your show, but to me, I love engineers, right? Like, I think the humans that can create the space shuttles, the submersibles that go deep in the ocean to see the Mariana Trench, to me, that's the coolest thing ever, is how humans can design and build all of these amazing creative things, which is also why I was so excited to be a part of this this book, too.
Yeah. And as you and I found out when we started Solve It for Kids podcast, an engineer, the biggest job is figuring out what question they need to ask or what problem they're needing to solve.
Yes, exactly. And then having the persistence to do it, right? Because you remember how many of them we asked and they're like, oh yeah, that didn't happen the first time. Didn't happen the first 10 times. Didn't happen the first 100 times, right? There's lots of, you have to redo and tweak and do all this kind of stuff. And it's all the critical thinking. And that is what I think is so cool about meeting all those scientists and engineers that we did on the Salt for Kids podcast. But this book kind of encapsulates all of that too. And we pick some of the coolest inventions that we hope, Dylan and I hope, kids read this and are like, wow, I didn't know this existed. And ooh, maybe that's what I want to do, right, when I grow up, sort of thing.
Yeah. You know, I kind of wish, I remember when I was in high school and I said, I want to help people. And I decided I'd get into social work. And but then now as I'm older and I think, you know, the guy who invented that giant excavator.
Right.
Think about all the people that that man or woman helped, because you need tires, you need metal, you need all these different, you know, there must be a gazillion parts, and there's probably 10 gazillion people who are involved in making all those different parts around the world. So, if you want to make a difference in people's lives, STEM and the sciences and inventions is a great way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is inventions, you know, are so cool. Like, kids can invent things all the time. My daughter, when she was, I think she was like 9 or 10, she started drawing her own invention notebook. And she came up with all of these like cool things that were perfect for like a 9-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't remember. I mean, I can't remember anything off the top of my head, but it was things that maybe would help her study better or would help her clean her room, right? And so that's another thing we hope kids do with this, is it inspires them to start inventing. Or you could get ideas from this and maybe mix and match a couple of different inventions and see what you come up with, right?
Yeah. I think it'd be kind of fun for a family. And here on Reading With Your Kids, we always talk about what kind of conversations families can have when they're reading a book. I think this would be a great way for a parent to challenge, after you read about one invention, say, hey, Johnny, Susie, can you invent X or Y? What would you do? What would you invent to solve this problem?
Yeah. Exactly. And that gets kids thinking outside the box, which they don't always get to do, you know, at school these days. It gets them together as a family, right? Because maybe each of the kids does an invention, or they work on it as a family invention, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you can use whatever you want. Like, you could just use popsicle sticks and glue and, you know, string and all that, amazing things, but who knows where it can lead, right?
Yeah.
I mean, kids come up with the most amazing ideas. I know when I was on here before talking about my Beastly Bionics book about biomimicry and how we look at the world and maybe look at animals in the world and turning them into like robots and what they could do. And one class up in the Boston area that I visited one time, they created a book of inventions, and I remember, I will never forget, one of the kids was this giant robot shark that would go through the ocean and eat up all of the plastics and the debris and everything that's in the ocean and clean up the ocean. I was like, perfect! Let's make that!
Absolutely. Absolutely. Was there any invention that surprised you?
So honestly, there's one, surprise might not be the best word, but there's one in here where, I cannot even say this right word. It is, there is a glass bridge, an entirely glass bridge. Okay. Now, this one didn't surprise me. It scared me because I am afraid of heights, and you look down and it is in China, and it is, let's see, it's that spans 1,400 feet across, but it is over a 1,300 foot deep chasm below. So it was really funny because, again, Ruby Fresson was amazing with the illustrations, and she has one kid drawn looking down, like laying flat on the bridge, looking like perhaps they don't want to move. And I was like, yeah, that's me. I think she drew me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. My beautiful wife went on, there's a, not so much a bridge, but an overwalk in the Grand Canyon.
Oh yeah.
And made of glass, and, her friends couldn't go out onto it. But my beautiful wife is out there. She's got her arms spread, lying down like she's flying. I went out. I chose. It was a long line to get back in the bridge, and my wife said, "Well, I did it, but if you want to go on it, I'll stand in line with you." And I said, "Oh no, dear, that's quite enough. I don't need your experience. I looked at it through your eyes, and that's enough for me."
Oh my gosh! Well, there's one building in Chicago, and you can go on it, and then they tip you out.
Yeah,
I'm like, I don't think so. No, you know, But yeah, I mean, there's so many cool inventions in here. So it goes all the way up to, you know, today stuff like nuclear power and nuclear fusion. And so kids could, I mean, maybe we could inspire the next, you know, nuclear fusion scientist or something like that. And it's short too. I will say this because, and that was the other challenge is that the edit, the illustrations are gorgeous and they take up the whole page and the words are kind of incorporated in the middle of it. And so the really hard part was, is the editor only gave us about 150 words or so, maybe 150 to 175 words to explain some really complex science. So there are lots of things where Dylan would put a word in and I'd take the word out. And then we, I mean, back and forth and back and forth, but they also made it visually beautiful to look at, as you're reading. And there's the illustrations contribute. There's one page where there are, I believe Chinese monks are printing books by hand and they look across the page and there is the Gutenberg press. And so she's made one of the characters be like, hey. I mean, so you have to look at the illustrations really carefully because they also fit into the story. They're, it's really funny.
Yeah. It sounds like one of those books, although we usually suggest this for families with younger kids, but it definitely sounds like Atlas Obscura would be a great book to take a picture walk through.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, before you read the words, just kind of look and check it out and see all those little small details.
Yeah, it definitely would. And this book, I think, is for kids of all ages, right? There's even adults that would love this because there's lots of information that you may not know about all these different things. And yes, it's written for 8 to 12-year-olds, but I even have that with my books. A lot of my middle grade books that are 8 to 12-year-olds, adults read them. And I get emails from them and I'm like, wow, thank you for reading my kid's book for yourself.
So you mentioned that you go all the way up to AI.
Mm-hmm.
Any insight as to when AI will be taking over the world?
Yeah, I'm not going to answer that one. I have no idea. I know it's a lot of places already and there are goods and bads to it, right? It depends on what you're looking for. My hope is that it doesn't take over writing for us, right? Because us authors, we would like to write our own books, but yeah, that's a big controversial topic.
It certainly is. And I always tell everybody that I am very polite when I use AI because when they do take over, I want them to remember that I was nice.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Now, I do have to say, I love robots, right? And I think we've talked about that before because when I went to NASA Johnson Space Center, I actually got to meet Valkyrie, which is the NASA's robot, humanoid robot that they hope one day to kind of put on the moon. And that for me was the coolest thing ever. If you see, go on my social media and you find that picture of me with Valkyrie, I think my smile is about 8 miles long. And I'm just like, look, it was very cool.
Hey, it would be very cool if we tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Atlas Obscura, Explorer's Guide to Inventing the World, and find out more about you.
Sure. So the book is published by Workman Publishing, so you can go to Workman Publishing's website. And also Atlas Obscura will have it on their website. But if you want to look for me and more of my books, my website is jenniferswansonbooks.com. And don't forget to check out my podcast, SolveItForKids.com, which I started with you. And you're still a part of it, even after you left, right? See if people can figure out where they can listen to you. But there's lots of cool information where we interview tons of engineers and scientists. And if you have the STEM kid and you don't know, like, what they can be, go take a listen to that podcast because we talk to a lot of different people with a lot of different careers.
A lot. And that's so cool that you turned me into an Easter egg on your podcast.
Yes. Isn't that cool?
You had a great time speaking to the co-author of Atlas Obscura, Explorer's Guide to Inventing the World. Our guest has been our dean of all things STEM and STEAM, the Admiral of Adventure, our reading with the Kip certified great read author and possibly New York Times best. Jennifer Swanson. Jennifer, thanks for being back on Reading with Your Kids.
Thanks so much for having me, Jed. It's always a blast.
That's it for today's chapter of Reading With Your Kids. Thanks for joining us on this adventure. This episode made you smile, made you think. Please share it with your family and friends. Leave a 5-star review, and like the kids say, smash that subscribe button. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so amazing, starting with our guest, Abigail Heng Nguyen. Please be sure to check out The Veil, her new middle grade novel. Also want to thank our Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, the Admiral of Adventure, Jennifer Swanson. Please be sure to check out Atlas Obscura, Explorer's Guide to Inventing the World. Want to thank our sponsors, Zivo.life, Zivo.life, Zivo.life. Use our promo code READ to save 30%. CozyEarth.com. Use our promo code READ, save 41%. And BigForkBrands.com. Use our promo code READ, and you will save 20%. When you use our promo codes, you score a great deal, and we may earn a small commission that helps keep the podcast magical and free for families everywhere. My team deserves a big shout-out. Thank you to Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty, L. Glassman, Dante Greco. I want to give a big thank you to my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we want to thank you. Remember, reading together is the real magic that connects us, one story at a time. Until next time, keep turning those pages and sharing those smiles.
From a cave with fire to the rocket's roar, ideas are knocking on invention's door. A spark in your brain, a twist, a twirl. Grab your gears, let's invent the world. Let's invent the world, one dream at a time. From bamboo bikes to a bridge made of ice. Maps and machines, ideas that swirl with curiosity. Let's invent the world. A girl with a plan, a boy with a kite, a dog with a blueprint late at night. From the pyramids tall to supersonic speed. Big ideas start with just one need. Try again. From ancient scrolls to future pens, ideas travel, grow, and spin. Sharing makes the magic begin. Let's invent. Like shoes that walk dogs or a homework fork. It might be weird, but that's okay. Every genius had to start some way. Lord, let's invent the world. Come on, let's play. Your big idea could change the day. With books and brains, dreams unfurled. You can help invent the world.
magic happens when we celebrate all the way.